Funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What common interest could unite a lonely 12-year-old, a former beauty queen, a cruise ship entertainer with a marriage on the rocks, a 6-foot-5-inch woman shunned by her own family, and a one-time landscaper from Mesquite now living like a king in Las Vegas? The answer is ventriloquism, which might seem like a quaint form of entertainment, but is still very much alive for a small but passionate group of performers who make their living at it or aspire to. Director Mark Goffman takes us into the world of vents, as the voice-throwing puppeteers call themselves, for his new documentary, Dumbstruck, which opens Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. Mark, welcome to THINK.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So I have to wonder, were you just looking around at subcultures and then finally decided this was the one? How did you find your way to this subject?
No, you know, I was writing on the West Wing at the time, and my wife and I got married. At our wedding, her mother, who's a very reserved, shy woman, was asked to deliver a toast. So she goes up to the microphone, and what I would consider a normal toast, where your lips move, what I thought she was going to do. Instead, she lifted her right hand, which had a white glove on it, and her lips didn't move, and she started to deliver this toast from her hand. And people were kind of shocked and laughing, but then it became incredibly charming and witty and funny, and this whole persona that I had never seen from my wife's mom came out. And I was so, you know, fascinated by that, that I started to talk to her about this hobby of hers. And she's a second grade school teacher. She does ventriloquism to keep the kids engaged, but what she's realized is that it can also be an outlet for her. And she told us about the convention in Kentucky where she and about 500 other ventriloquists go to every year. And she described it to us. We just thought, wow, this is something straight out of a Christopher Guest film. I've got to go see and check it out for myself.
What I love about the film, and you're right, there are, for people who have seen Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show, there are scenes that will sort of be eerily familiar in some ways. But you always stop short of kind of making fools out of your subjects. Was that harder than when one might imagine?
Well, you know, the truth is, we took a lot of time and care to treat these people with respect and love. I mean, the whole thing was inspired by my mother-in-law. She's a big part of that community. And I was just fascinated by the art form. And I thought, you know, these people are going to let us into their lives and show us who they really are. I wanted to make a film about people, not necessarily ventriloquists. That, to me, was just the entree to get to know them and what they do. And so we really, you know, worked very hard to be able to, I think in the film, you see them and you laugh initially, like, wow, this is such a strange, you know, art form and such an unusual hobby or vocation these people have picked. But somewhere around 15, 20 minutes into the film, you're really rooting for them. And you just fall, as I did, I fell in love with every one of these characters.
If there's one thing they all seem to have in common, perhaps with the exception of a guy named Terry Fader, who we'll talk about later in the show, it's a kind of profound sort of loneliness that comes from loving something that their friends and families can't entirely understand.
Yeah, it was that wasn't necessarily, you know, something we went in expecting to find. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people can relate to that at some point. Certainly I did, and that was a theme we picked up on, is you can have a hobby or a passion that you truly love and enjoy doing. And especially, you know, for Dylan, who's in, you know, the middle of Kentucky, and in the film, we see his dad just can't understand why he's not more into motorcycles and football, which he's actually good at, but he would prefer to spend time in this little hovel under the stairs of his house practicing ventriloquism.
Dylan, for being 13 years old, is probably about the smallest kid in his class, and it's been that way for a long time. He's just very small.
Dylan is a very quiet, shy person until he gets on stage, and then he's totally different. And I think it's because he has his friend. It's like you have someone up there with you, and Reggie is the one doing the work.
He's white. He can't get a girl to save his life, so
and Reggie hasn't been having any girls come here lately,
so you know about you've been at work on the weekdays.
I know he's very passionate about the figure and doing the ventriloquism, because there's a lot of kids out there that are playing football and they have to practice twice a day, 11 months out of the year. So I think those guys are also pretty passionate about what they do.
This is my motorcycle right here, this Yamaha YZ250. I've been riding since I was 9 years old, so I've been at it for a long time. Now with the motorcycles and some of the other activities, I can kind of coach him a little bit. When it comes to ventriloquism, I don't know anything about it.
Motocross, I'm not the best. I mean, I'm pretty good. I just don't feel like I'll ever be good enough to become pro.
Entertainment of the day.
Hey, Dave, this is Dylan.
Dylan?
After the last convention, I kind of thought, you know, one show isn't really enough per year, so I decided to kind of look in the phone books, call every talent agency, and I contacted them. I called and said, hey, do you hire ventriloquists?
The whole thing's been Dylan, and he called this place, this talent agency, all by himself, so it's all been Dylan. I have very little to do with this.
There, of course, we hear Dylan and his mother and his father, who just wants his son to ride bikes and play football like the other kids that he knows. That is a cut from Mark Goffman's film Dumbstruck. The documentary opens Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. I think one of my favorite scenes in the film, Mark, is where Dylan goes to audition for this regional circus based in Cincinnati. Suffice it to say, it does not go particularly well. Did you know going in to shoot that scene that it would probably play out the way it did?
No, you know, one of the things that's really been eye-opening for me is I'm used to being a writer. I write right now on a TV show called White Collar. I am used to scripting things, and I had very different endings and ways that this story would go. But in a documentary film, you have to, you know, follow the way the truth winds up. And almost every one of these characters continued to shock and amaze me, and the things in this film were far beyond what I ever could have imagined, particularly with Terry. But for Dylan, in that point, you know, I talked to his mom, and he was so excited about this audition. And he had really, you know, this again, like his dad says, he looked up all the agents in Kentucky, found this circus, which was the only place that, you know, you might be able to get work in Kentucky as a ventriloquist, and had prepped for months for it. And I really, you know, I talked to his mother beforehand. I was like, just make sure he's ready. And when we went, you know, he was excited. He went motorcycle riding that morning to sort of get geared up. And it was just heartbreaking to watch. And you know, I, with so many parts of this film, you know, with a kid, you want to be careful about how you portray him. And, you know, I knew he was going to see this later. But one of the things that I found so inspiring about all of these characters is their perseverance. And he knew that he bombed, and yet, you know, he didn't miss a beat and got right back up and said, I'm going to get it next time. And, you know, with Kim and her mom and every one of the, and Terry, obviously, for 22 years he struggled. Every one of these characters have that kind of perseverance.
Yeah, Kim is the former, is it Miss Ohio?
Yes.
Yeah, Miss Ohio, and she's beautiful, and she's like 32 years old, and you imagine she could do anything she wants, and what she wants is a job on a cruise ship with her puppet just performing for people, and her mother thinks she's absolutely insane.
Yeah. She was just, I mean, when we walked into the convention and met her, they have, if you ever go to the Fort Mitchell, Kentucky convention, they have these showrooms where different ventriloquists and puppet makers show their wares. And Kim had a booth that she does accessories. So if you ever want to, you know, have a new wardrobe for your puppet, she'll help you, you know, accessorize. And she is just the perfect beauty queen. And she actually got this very expensive puppet from the sort of the guy who's known as the Stradivarius of puppet makers, which is Bertha. And she had decided, now that, you know, she had, her engagement had been called off, that she's always wanted to do cruises. She went on one the year before and just had a blast. And that was what we really thought was kind of the pinnacle of what you could aspire to as a ventriloquist, because they were one of the few places that steadily still hire, they pay well, and it seems like this fun, romantic, kind of exotic life where you're traveling around the world, getting to perform and getting paid well to do it. And that was just the fantasy that she had of it. And then, you know, we got to watch her try to pursue that dream, to much to her mom's chagrin, in Mansfield, Ohio.
Director Mark Goffman is my guest. His new documentary, Dumbstruck, opens Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. We'll talk to Mark more after this break. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can also get to us by sending an email to think@kera.org. Right now, we are reminding you, once again, as if you need a reminder, that we are in our spring fundraising campaign. Your contributions to this station help us to keep bringing you interviews like this one with Mark Goffman, like the one we had last hour with David Sirota, and the ones that we bring you every single day that the show is on the air. Your contribution at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931 provides this station with the funding necessary to make all this programming possible. Jeff Whittington is back. He is the senior producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I want to thank Margaret Trail in Kemp. Hey, my grandparents used to live in Kemp. Thank you so much, Margaret, for listening and for supporting the station. Also, Joseph Oldham in Dallas. We heard from Misty and Aaron Johnson in Little Elm and Nathan Nelson in Dallas. Those folks all called either 888-694-6931, or perhaps they went online to kera.org and made a contribution, really probably in just the last few minutes. You can do the same. We hope that you will follow their lead and join them and the couple of thousand at this point people who have supported the station during this membership campaign. You know, Chris, you and I know, and actually I think you out there listening know this as well, if you've listened to public radio for any time at all, this is how it's done. This is how we raise the money to be able to bring you these kinds of conversations every day. And our guests are so generous with their time. And I want to thank Mark Goffman for hanging on there while we have these short breaks. But this is really so necessary because it's the only way that we can continue to bring you these kinds of long format conversations that you don't find anywhere else, because we don't owe anybody anything. We do this for you. This is because you support the station and the station is here to serve you.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. The other great thing about not, you know, serving advertisers directly is that, you know, we're never obligated to do or not do any particular topic. You know, Jeff and I think about it. We think about, first and foremost, we think about what will interest you as an audience. We think about what sort of strikes our fancy and how it will play out as a show and whether or not a topic will sustain itself for an hour. You know, the other thing is that a lot of the reason that public radio maybe sounds different is that we can get into things that wouldn't work in a 2-minute conversation where we just had a time, you know, really to ask one or two questions.
And we're, of course, thrilled to tell you about Mark's film, Dumbstruck, that's opening this weekend in Dallas. And, you know, the idea is that we have this in-depth conversation on the show, and then you have the option, whether we talk to an author, we talk to someone who's in town or coming to town to give a talk about a topic that is important, that you think is important in the world today, or a film that's opening. You have the chance to go and see that talk or meet that author or read that book or see the film. And that's the whole idea. You know, the idea is that you can take it, you can take your study of the topic even further after you listen to the show. We hope that you'll support it, though, with a contribution today at kera.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931.
Your contributions, as we have said over and over, provide 61 cents of every dollar it takes to run this station. The rest comes from, we get some government support, we get corporate underwriting, and we have some foundation support. But the majority of the money comes from people just like you who listen, and we greatly appreciate your support. You can get online and go to kera.org and make your contribution there with a credit or a debit card, or you can set up a sustaining membership. You can also do it over the phone if that's easier. You can call 1-888-694-6931. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the director of the new documentary, Dumbstruck, Mark Goffman.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer-director Mark Goffman. His new documentary, Dumbstruck, opens this Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. If you'd like to join the conversation, call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Throughout the film, Mark, we see Kim sort of cultivating her act and trying to work to make it the best that it can possibly be. Can you talk about what you learned throughout the course of making this film about what it takes for a serious ventriloquist to develop characters, to refine their acts, and to make sure that they have the best presentation possible?
Oh, sure. The first thing that I realized is it's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
If you think of just a traditional stand-up comic, you're going up on stage, you've got to tell jokes, you've got to make people laugh. Now imagine doing that, but you're going to create another character, a whole different persona that's going to be up there with you. And then if we turn the puppet around at one point in the film to show how intricate these things are. They can sell for upwards of $20,000, and they're really like an instrument. You're moving the eyes. You have to move the lips to the exact sync of what they're saying. You have to not move your lips. And you're wiggling their ears, moving their hands. Dan Horn actually in the film travels to Japan to sort of give a lecture there about the art of making a puppet feel lifelike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an incredible gift to be able to have one of these characters that looks lifelike and acts lifelike. And then on top of all that, the routines only work if they're funny and they entertain you. And that's ultimately what it's all about, and that's what we get to and what we see with the ones who succeed.
Let's hear a little from the film that sort of shows us part of Dan's life as he works on cruise ships.
We are here in San Diego, California, and I'm just starting my season working the Mexican Riviera.
The cruise ships are very much like the latter-day Las Vegas now. They're putting on big, splashy shows, and they're bringing in name entertainment, and people can come into beautiful theaters.
Setting sail, it's a lot of fun. You're embarking on an adventure, and it feels like that.
You need to sing into the mic, otherwise the audience can't hear you.
Is it on?
Yes, it is. It's on. Don't do that again.
All
right,
now
just
John, I'd like to say two words. Rogaine. I'm kidding. That's one word. John, do you like games? Yeah? How about peekaboo?
Don't do that!
It's taken me years and years and years to hone the craft and to write the material and to get the timing down.
John, he's mad and then you're just sitting there!
I've never seen you act like this. What is your problem here tonight?
The way to really be successful, though, is to try to reach a level of performing where you're consistent, where people feel like they're seeing this for the first time. They want to feel like they've witnessed something unique and in the moment.
That is Dan Horn in a cut from Mark Goffman's new documentary, Dumbstruck. Dan is such a character that we absolutely pull for. He is incredibly talented. He's popular and he is a workhorse. And throughout the course of the film, you realize that it has taken a toll on the rest of his life.
Oh, yeah. We thought initially Dan was going to be the rock in the film, that he was what every ventriloquist aspired to do. He had this fantastic career that was some 15 years on cruise ships. Kim, everyone at the convention looked up to him. He's kind of renowned as one of the best puppet manipulators on the planet. He travels around the world lecturing and just he was on Letterman, and we show a clip of him on Letterman's Ventriloquist Week. And then 3 days before we're supposed to set sail with him on a cruise out of San Diego, I get this email from him. He just received an email from his wife of 25 years that she wanted a divorce.
An email.
And he got it in an email. It's hard to talk at sea when you're on the ship, and that's how she sent it to him. And he was blindsided by it. And at first he said, look, I'm such a wreck, and I know you wanted to make this funny documentary, and I don't know if I'm even going to be able to complete a sentence. Part of me, my heart just went out to mm-hmm. this guy, and it was so soon. And I thought, oh, I need to give him his space. But then on the other hand, as a filmmaker, I'm like, wow, this is incredible drama.
Yeah.
I got to get down there. So, you know, I said to him, look, let me turn off the cameras. I'll go down to San Diego with the crew and let's just talk for a little while. And it only took him about 5 minutes or so before it just like this whole, you know, waterfall of emotions came out. And he realized that the film can be very cathartic for him. And he just, you know, he said, we told him we're making a film about people and the lives that you guys lead as trying to pursue this career that you love. And this is one of the costs is he's on a cruise ship about 6 months a year. And after a certain amount of time, that just really took a toll on his family.
And he just, you know, he comes across, I don't know anything about his marriage specifically, but he seems like a really good guy. And he also tells you at one point in the film, he just doesn't know what else he could do to make a living. This is what he does.
Yeah, he said, if I could, I would love to move back to Arizona and get a job at the local, you know, ventriloquist stand and work there, you know, from 9 to 5. But there's no such thing. If I want to make a real living, the cruise ships are the only option. And he really is a born entertainer, and you see that when he performs, and you see how happy he is and the joy he gets from making people laugh. And, you know, as tough as what he went through was, again, what I loved is by the end of the film, you see how, you know, he feels he made the right choice in not going home. And because he says if he leaves, if he even gives up that slot for a week, they replace him, and it's very hard to get that job back. And then what's he going to do? And so it was really nice to see him kind of come to terms with that over the film.
We have an email here from Nancy in Dallas who says, it sounds like a fascinating film. I'm considering taking my son with me. Would it be appropriate for a 9-year-old? I would say yes, but I'm curious about your opinion about that, Mark.
Yeah, it's rated PG. And what we found is that whole families can see this. We actually got a really nice review from Movie Mom, and you can look her up on moviemom.com, BeliefNet. We're really proud of the fact that it is a film that the whole family can enjoy. And it's interesting because one of the things about ventriloquism in general, it was an art form that was the most popular form of entertainment in the 50s and 60s. Hmm. It was between Edgar Bergen and the Ed Sullivan Show and Howdy Doody and Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop, these were all household names and the most popular entertainers. And in the film, you find that the people who are still doing it today have this almost retro, wholesome mentality to their acts. It kind of harkens back to a simpler time. The jokes are a little more pure. It's found in smaller towns and smaller venues. And we found that most of the performers really take pride in the fact that their acts are family-friendly. And I think that kind of sweetness and fun carries through the film. And, you know, you can get it. The kids seem to enjoy just looking at the puppets and hearing the routines. And then, of course, there's a much, much deeper level and a lot more going on that I think adults get out of it.
Yeah. With all that said, I want to ask you about Wilma. This is
sure.
The woman that I referred to in the introduction, 6'5", has been sort of abandoned by her family, has had a lot of personal struggles and finds acceptance. She's not, I'll say she's not the most compelling ventriloquist in the film, but a compelling character. Now, she tells us that her family sort of gave up on her because of her love of ventriloquism. I think any adult who watches the film gets a sense that there is a great deal more to the story than that. And I'm curious if you can just talk about, and people will see the film and understand what I'm talking about if they haven't already figured it out, but why did you decide to sort of leave that unspoken as opposed to looking at it head on?
Well, you know, it's a film about ventriloquism. It's a film about these people, and I really wanted them to tell their stories. I didn't do voiceover narration. I really let them tell the stories they wanted to tell about themselves, and I feel like as you're picking up people's looks and expressions, and a lot of times what they say reveals more about what they're hiding than the actual words they say,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that was really powerful, especially with Wilma. And so when we first started talking to her, we shot over 3 years. I mean, we really took a long time with these people. And it took that long to gain their trust and to allow, you know, to really feel like we had full, satisfying stories. But with Wilma, you know, when I asked her outright, why do you think your family disowned you? Why aren't you still talking to any of them? That's the answer she gave us. And, you know, it was kind of stunning to all of us because it seems much more obvious when you look at this woman who's 6'5" and you hear about her story that there's a lot more going on. And even her nephew, you know, really just said, well, she has a medical condition. After 3 years of shooting, she did say to me, you know, I'm happy to talk a little bit more about, you know, my life and how I got to this point. But at that point in the film, we really felt like her story had taken such a different direction that what was important was her relationship with the ventriloquist community, that they were her new family. Mm-hmm. They accepted her for who she was now and who she is. And that was the important part of the film, not necessarily her past. And I feel like there are enough little clues in there, like when you talk about, she talks about her son, who she hasn't seen, and his name is William Jr. There's little clues that you can pick up on, but I really like the way it lays out right now.
Yeah, no, I think it was a fascinating choice and not one that most people would probably expect. My guest this hour is director Mark Goffman. His new documentary, Dumbstruck, opens this Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. We are going to talk more to Mark in a couple of minutes. You can join the conversation by sending an email to think@kera.org. You can also call 1-800-933-5372 to send a question via email. If you would like to become a member of the station, that line is also wide open. It's 1-888-694-6931, or you can go online to kera.org and make your contribution there. You know, often we like to read the names of people. We've also had people making anonymous contributions to the station. Essentially, you just say, don't read my name on the air, and there's a way to sort of check that box online or to tell the people on the phone. But all those of you who have made contributions and asked not to have your names read, we also, of course, extend our great thanks to you for your contributions.
Absolutely. We also got an email, actually, in our inbox at think@kera.org from Steve Maines, who says, I'm a member of the station, and I'm sure I'm not original, but Think always gets me with very interesting topics, such as the last hour and this hour. He says, these are my driveway hours, not driveway moments. Well, Steve, thanks so much for your support of the station, and thanks for your message.
Steve always asks great questions, too, so we appreciate the compliment.
Steve does. Steve participates in the show as well. If you get something out of this show, if you find yourself riveted to these kinds of conversations, if you're anything like Steve or the many listeners who call and participate in the show and email in and also support the station during the membership campaign, please consider making a contribution right now at kera.org or via the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Only with your support can KERA remain fiscally sound and healthy down the road as far as next week and down the road as far as next year. It's your contributions that fuel this radio station. And I just hope that you won't count on someone else to do it, that you'll choose to take part and claim a little bit of that responsibility for yourself today.
When you join during this show, specifically, you become a sort of member of the team that makes Think possible. We know that you're here, and we're doing this show for your benefit and because you listen to it and because you enjoy it. Your dollars also help to make it possible. This show and also all the other programs that you enjoy on this station, including Anything You Ever Wanted to Know on Fridays and Away with Words and all the great weekend programming and Morning Edition and All Things Considered. And, you know, I could go through the entire schedule, and you could probably go through it with me because so many of you listen for hours upon hours. The podcast is something we know many of you enjoy. It's always a kick for us to hear about people from other parts of the country outside of North Texas who also enjoy the podcast. And those of you who live in this community ought to know that there are podcast listeners in far corners of the world that make contributions to ensure that the extra expenses of the podcast are covered and that we're able to bring you this option. We really appreciate that. And I think it's a great inspiration to those of us who live here and for whom this is our local public radio station to make a contribution every year.
And when you support the station at kera.org or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931, you might choose to receive a thank you gift. We have the new KERA polo shirt It comes in a variety of sizes from small up to 2XL. It's available at the $125 membership level or more. It's a steel gray polo shirt. It's got the embroidered logo on it. It's a pretty cool thing. You can check it out online at KERA.org. And when you support the station and choose that, you'll be able to show your support on the streets, in the wild, in the office, on the golf course.
Get a high five from other public radio people with their tote bags and
absolutely.
Their water bottles.
People will know, people will be able to spot you as a supporter, not just a listener of KERA, but a supporter of the station.
Have I ever seen you in a polo shirt?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Was it a station logo polo shirt?
It was not.
Oh.
It might have been. I have a KERA staff polo shirt, but I don't know if I've worn it in a long time.
Drag that out and show your station pride.
That's right.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. I think the average gift to the station, sort of varies from drive to drive between about $100 to about $130. Your contribution amount is up to you. Many of you find that if $120 is too much to do all at once, that, you know, the $10 a month sustaining membership plan works really well. Some of you are able to do a friends level membership at $1,500 or more. And for others, look, a basic membership of $35 or $5 a month at the $60 level, that's what works for you. We allow you to, you know, we're all adults here. You can decide what works within your own budget. But we do ask everyone who listens to the station. The hope is that everyone will make some contribution to keep public radio strong in this community. At KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
The number is 1-888-694-6931. You can make your contribution online at KERA.org. Actually, it saves the station a little bit of money when you make your contribution online. It's a little cheaper for us to process. Of course, we'll take your call, but if you want to fill out the membership form yourself, it's all available there safely and securely at KERA.org. Just click on the support banner the top of the page when you get to the website, and it will whisk you to the secure pledge-making area of the website.
There's not enough whisking in the world today.
That's right. You can be whisked away by our website.
The great news is we've got this thing streamlined so much that you can probably get online right now or get on the phone right now at 1-888-694-6931 and be finished with your transaction or just about by the time we come back in about 2.5 minutes to conclude our discussion with director Mark Goffman about the documentary Dumbstruck. Again, the website is KERA.org and the telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. Hope to hear from you momentarily.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Summer Youth Programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is screenwriter and director Mark Goffman. His new documentary, Dumbstruck, will open Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-933-5372 is our number. So, Mark, let's talk about Terry Fader, whose name may now sound quite familiar to people who perhaps have seen him on America's Got Talent. Did you start the film and he was not yet who he is today?
Correct.
Huh.
When we first started doing this, it was 2007, and we went to the convention in Kentucky, and we just asked everyone who were the most talented ventriloquist anyone had seen. And at that point, Terry was completely unknown. No, he had never even been to the convention, and no one in the ventriloquist world really had heard of him. But it just so happened that the convention's in July. It was during the first week of America's Got Talent. And one of the people we talked to said, you know, I've never met this guy before, but you ought to tune in next week to America's Got Talent. He seems really good. And so we watched the next week. And you watch him for 5 seconds, and you're just completely in awe. And so we just contacted him right away. And he said, yeah, come on out to Dallas and hang out and make you some barbecue. And, you know, I'm from Houston, so I jumped at the chance to get back out there, and we went and visited him. And it's funny because he told us at that time that he wanted a deal to headline in Las Vegas. And, you know, my wife and I, my wife's the producer on the film, we just kind of thought, this is, of all of the ambitions in the film, this is clearly the most ambitious and possibly, you know, unrealistic. I mean, that just doesn't happen for ventriloquists, and it doesn't happen. It's hard to get anyone to get to that kind of deal in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and at this point, he's got a career background as a musician, and he's done some performing, but he had for long stretches of his adult life, like mowed lawns and painted houses to put food on the table.
Yeah, he said at the time he was 42 years old, and really, you know, had supplemented his income. This was clearly his love, and Walter, who was the puppet that's in the film and the puppet we see most often or most closely associated with him, you know, is something I think he developed in his late teens. He's been doing this for, you know, almost, I think, since age 8 or 9, and he just loved it, and so, you know, however he could support himself, painting houses, you know, mowing lawns. He talks about how, you know, he'd have a show where one or two people would show up.
How amazing must it be to be able to follow someone for a project like this and literally document their wildest dream coming true?
It was unimaginable. I mean, we really thought, like, we're shooting this film about people pursuing their dreams, and it was fun, and it was quirky, and it had this, you know, Christopher Guest feel to it just because of the subject matter and the way we were shooting. But then suddenly, you know, when I still remember his manager calling me up and saying, "You got to come out to Las Vegas. Whatever you do, get your crew, come out on this Wednesday morning, be there by 11, and we'll have a surprise for you." And I knew that he was obviously doing very well at that point. But we walk in and we get the cameras ready, and we go into the CEO's office of the Mirage Hotel, and laid out is his contract with all the signature papers. And they walk us through, and Terry goes and sits down, and he signs the largest deal one of the largest deals in Las Vegas history, $100 million deal. And to be there with him when he goes on Letterman, and to be there, you know, as his that year of his life, it's very rare to be able to be present and be, you know, shooting with two cameras to capture a moment in history that is someone's rise from relative obscurity to superstardom. And I'll always, you know, feel blessed that we just happened to pick one of the most unusual years in history to make the film.
Let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We have Jim on the line in Dallas. Hey, Jim.
Hi. As someone who's been in the film industry, I was curious if our guest has considered the parallels between the ventriloquist and the director. And I'll listen off air.
Interesting question. Or screenwriter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's what I related to most, and I hope that most people will, that I think it's a fairly universal theme. I mean, to me, I saw, for the characters in the film, it's a dream of ventriloquism and of making it and having talent and pursuing that dream. For me, it was becoming a writer, and I can still remember, you know, it's very risky to move out to L.A., and I didn't have any particular connections. And there were a lot of years where I struggled and really wondered if it was going to happen for me. And the persistence and the drive, and, you know, finally I got this incredibly lucky break and got onto my favorite show, which was The West Wing at the time. And, you know, so I related to each of these characters and the family dynamic of, you know, when you tell them you're going to do something unusual. In my family, it was very much, you know, become a doctor or a lawyer, the other things weren't discouraged. It was just what was encouraged. So I can't say it was quite as bad as you know, or exaggerated as it is for other people in the film. But what I love is that, you know, Kim's mom and Dylan's dad, they think they're being supportive, and they try to be, and they're so funny. I mean, they're just, you know, I had a director here who saw the film who said he didn't think he could direct anyone with better comedic timing than Kim's mom. It's just hysterical. Every comment out of her mouth, it was gold. But I really related to that theme of persistence and pursuing your dream and having something that maybe not, you know, a talent or a hobby that not everybody else understands. And, you know, and I hope that other people see that too.
It also must be interesting, Mark, to have tapped into a segment of what is definitely the entertainment industry that is completely divorced from Hollywood and that entire culture.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it sort of like I remember when blue collar radio first came on, mm-hmm. and it was really something that was very foreign to the coast, to New York and L.A., and they kind of looked down on it. And then suddenly you realize that there are more people listening and watching, blue collar comedy than any of the other forms. And I wanted to see if ventriloquism had that. I knew that it had gone underground, and it was so popular in the 50s and 60s. And it has this real stigma to mainstream entertainment. The only films you find in Hollywood are dummies that come alive and attack their neighbors and schizophrenic ventriloquists. But what was kind of amazing was over the course of shooting the film, the way it's sort of come back into the mainstream. People like Jeff Dunham, another Dallas native, mm-hmm. who has YouTube hits in the hundreds of millions and had one of the highest rated shows on Comedy Central's history. Jay Johnson, who won a Tony for The Two and Only, actually also another Dallas native. There's something about Dallas. I'm not sure what it is, but three of the most successful ventriloquists alive today are all from Dallas.
I would not even try to speculate on that, particularly while we're fundraising right now. But I have to ask you, have you stood in the bathroom mirror and ever tried to speak without moving your lips?
Oh, I have tried. It's really hard. I have a one-year-old kid, and Dan Horn got us a really fun puppet that we've been playing with him, and my wife and I will try. But I think I'll leave it to the professionals. It takes a real talent.
Yeah, and I guess there's no, like, you can't really take a class in this, right?
There are a couple of classes. It's funny because the people in the film that we talked to, it used to be you could order out of the Sears catalog a Charlie McCarthy doll, and it came with an instruction book. And that's how Terry learned, and that's how I think Dan learned. Today, there's a Mayer course, which is a book and a CD, I believe. But there's not like a university for it. The convention is about the only place that you can go.
Huh.
It's a very small, tight-knit community. And as you said, it's not really in the mainstream entertainment now. Although, who knows, maybe with the success of some of these people, we'll find lots of budding young ventriloquists out there.
Well, the documentary is really charming, Mark, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about it.
Oh, thank you so much. Really fun.
The new documentary by Mark Goffman is called Dumbstruck. It will open on Friday at the Magnolia Theater in Dallas. I want to thank all of you who have been listening this hour, who have participated in the show via email, on the phone, and especially we want to thank those of you who are supporting the station, this fundraising campaign, with your gifts of financial support. They can be made at kera.org online or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. As Jeff mentioned earlier, among the thank you gifts we have available this time are the brand new KERA polo shirt. This is available at or above the $125 level. It's kind of a steel gray color, a pique knit. It's kind of a heavyweight cotton, 100% cotton, and it has a flat knit collar and cuffs, locker patch, I do not know what that means, horn tone buttons, and side vents. So this is a quality, if you've got a locker patch, that's a quality shirt, I'm told.
You can see.
Is that like where you can hang it on a hook, maybe?
I have no idea.
Locker patch.
I have no idea.
Someone will come racing in here and tell us.
There's a show on Friday you can call in if you want and ask.
What is a locker patch?
You can ask that question.
Ask that for me.
Well, you'll need to email it or call, Chris. I can't remember the question. Between now and Friday, I'll forget.
I had something else that I wanted to ask you, too.
Well, I'm sure you'll think. I'm sure.
I'll have to email it in, though. 1-888-694-6. See, we get no special treatment here. This is how
That's right. There's a process to everything.
Yes, exactly.
1-888-694-6931 is the number to call. You can see the locker patch feature, the locker patch sporting shirt, online at kera.org. When you make your contribution there, you can sort of thumb through the thank you gifts. That was a great interview. That was really interesting. I mean, you never think that. And honestly, when we found out about the film,
Jeff and I rolled our eyes and said, "Let's watch it anyway."
A little bit, and we said, "Gosh, you know, I was really surprised at the first of all that." Terry Fader has a $100 million contract. That's huge.
He's really good.
And he's very, very good. But it's the people are so interesting in this film. And the fact that this goes on, that's kind of that this happens, this huge convention happens every year, that Miss Ohio is a ventriloquist and has this line of clothing. I mean, it's...
You get drawn in the first 3 minutes.
Absolutely. So we were really excited to be able to bring you the show today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that you enjoy the show and the station enough to support the station by calling 888-694-6931 or by contributing at KERA.org.
Think about this. If you go with your significant other to see the film, you know, what's a movie ticket today, $10 or $11? You don't think twice about that for, you know, 2 hours of entertainment. How many hours of entertainment do you get every year from KERA? Think about that, and maybe you can't do, you know, $10 for every hour you listen over the course of a year. But maybe if you listen for, you know, 12 or 15 hours a week, you can do $10 for each hour representative per week, you know, so $120 or $150. Maybe that works for you.
Yeah, think about how much you listen to the station, for sure. I mean, if you listen to the station for just 2 hours a week, that's 500 and something hours a year. That's like almost working. That's like a fourth of a full-time job. That's how much time you're spending with KERA. We're just asking you to offset some of the cost associated with bringing you this programming. I want to thank Jerry Wilson and Richardson, Brian Kerr and Gun Barrel City, Jeff Tingley. Hello, Jeff. Thank you so much for your contribution in Dallas, and Neil Smith in Dallas. Also, Jason Jellin. Is it Jellin or Jellu?
Like Jellin.
It's either Jellin or Jellu. Jason, thank you so much in Dallas for your contribution. We'd love to see your name come across, or of course, you can make your anonymous gift as well online at KERA.org or via 888-694-6931.
Here's the honest truth. We really value the trust that you place in this organization. And I've mentioned it before, but, you know, just about everybody who works here is voluntarily a member of the station. We once a year decide how much the station is worth to us and make a contribution. So we are really extra sensitive to the importance of spending money wisely that comes in here. You know, Jeff and I don't spend money directly, but we all work together to sort of keep our expenses down, because our commitment is to bringing you the programming that you really care about, and we need to make sure that those resources are always there. Of course, we can only spend, you know, last year's contributions so carefully before, you know, the next budget cycle comes around, and we come to you and just ask you to honestly consider how much the station is worth to you and think about, you know, placing your trust in us and giving some money to us so that we can provide for you.
888-694-6931 is the phone place to do that. The web place to do that is KERA.org. We would love to hear from you today. We are a little over halfway on this membership campaign. We got an update at the start of the show today. We're about $315,000-plus raised, and the goal is $625,000. So it's within our sights. We're over the hill, as you can say, on this drive. So, but your contribution right now is really crucial to getting us that last bit of the way. The drive ends when we make the goal. So you really do have control over this, because if you make your contribution sooner rather than later, obviously, if everyone does that, who's going to contribute during the drive will end that much faster. We won't fundraise again until the fall. And this is the last chance that KERA 90.1 has to raise money this fiscal year, because our fiscal year ends in June. So it's an important drive for the station. It's an important way for you to support the station that you use as well. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org.
This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at KERA.org. It's your source. It's your station. This station is owned locally. It is programmed locally. Decisions made about what happens here happen according to the judgment of people who live and work in this community. We're all invested in North Texas as residents and as sort of members of this area. We want this to be a good radio station because it's our radio station. And I say our, and I include you, because you in the audience, particularly those of you who make the contributions to keep the station running, are part of the team that makes public radio possible. If we didn't have contributions from listeners, we wouldn't have a radio station. It is that simple.
1-888-694-6931 is the phone number. The web address, it's KERA.org. Just go there, click on the support banner, decide how much the station is worth to you, decide how you want to pay, if you want to use a credit card, a debit card, if you want us to bill you and you can send in a personal check, we can do that as well. But please do make the decision, make the choice to support the station today. Again, the phone number is 888-694-6931, or you can join online at KERA.org. Thanks.